All right, it's my turn. This is Cam Marston. You're listening to What's Working. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. The focus of the show, the workplace and the workforce trends that are shaping your businesses today. Our goal, as always, to find the experts out there who can lend us some insight into quote-unquote what's going on out there. And today I come to you with a prize. There are some people that we ask to be on the show that we never hear from, frankly. There are some people that we ask to be on the show that we think that's just too much of a get for somebody like me. I'm kind of modest. There's some people that reply, though, and it really catches us off guard, and we don't know how to behave. Today is one of those days. Chester Elton is a consultant. He's a speaker. He has done the firsthand research of over 1 million people across the nation to talk to them about workplace engagement. And I'm going to give you more of him when we come back from this first break. But this morning, I was getting a cup of coffee at a local store that's reopened. And I thought, I wonder what they would do if I could ask them, if you could reset your employee culture now that people are beginning to come back, what would you do differently? Most people aren't equipped to answer that. They just don't know how. Chester does. And we're going to pose that question to him when we get him on the phone, because he's an expert, having interviewed 1 million people, him and his company, on workplace and workforce engagement. When we get him on the line, I'm going to pose a situation to him that I heard yesterday, when I sat down to lunch with a friend about employee engagement. And this is going to be a good one. We're going to finish our show today with Ed Castile. Ed is the Deputy Secretary of Alabama Industrial Development Training. And we've talked to him on the show before. I'm really curious what he's doing out there these days. How is he staying busy? So we're going to talk to him about what his job looks like now. He is one of the people that recruits industry to the state of Alabama to build things, all the car factories. Ed had a role in that. I'm wondering what he's doing. Happy to report on a different topic that the July 15th webinar that we continue to work on to hone is getting better and better. We've got Mark Sanborn engaged in this process. He's going to lead a workshop for us at noon on July the 15th as a webinar called The Post-COVID Workplace, the 3 Most Important Changes You Need to Make Now. Folks, I want you to gather your team, your sales team, your internal team in the warehouse, around the conference table, whatever it may be, on July the 15th. We are also very close to announcing a couple of pizza delivery companies here in town that are going to put a special coupon code out for you so that you can feed your team at noon on July the 15th. That coupon code is going to be good for that day only, for this event only. Mark Sanborn has written 1 book that sold millions called The Fred Factor and 8 others. It's going to be a high-content, high-quality webinar beginning at noon on Wednesday, July 15th. The cost only $49. You'll have to buy the pizza, but to get this content, $49. Speaking of money, last night we had Luann Pappas on the show. She's the CEO of the Scarlet Pearl Casino. She was on at the 6 p.m. Original Edition Deep Dive show talking to us about how they've reacted. They've done a remarkable pivot, here's that word again, in the post-COVID world and began to work with the state of Mississippi to gather information on these unemployment claims. A part of their process of hiring is the exact same that the state of Mississippi uses for unemployment claims. So they lent themselves to the state of Mississippi and came back and got some business during that time to keep the doors open, to keep people employee. It's another good example of how to pivot. Go find that interview at whatsworkingcam.com and listen to instruction from Luann on how to pivot. Our social media is buzzing. It continues to do so. We're investing more time and energy into it. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Instagram. And I'll tell you what we have at the text offering today after we get back from the break. Text What's Working to 44222. It has a little bit to do with a lot of the content that we are going to get from Chester and some of the case studies that his company is responsible for. Lots of good content, a good show for you today, and I'm still looking for more stories of take it or leave it. Here's what I'm taking from the post-COVID environment, Cam. Here are things that I'm not going to let go. Here, on the other hand, are things that I can't wait to never see it again. Take it or leave it. Email me, cam@whatsworkingcam.com. Tell me what you're going to take. Tell me what you're going to leave. We'll bring it to the show. We'll be right back with Chester Elton after this break. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. I'm Cam Marston. On the line, Chester Elton. Let me give you a sense of this man's bio, and we'll get into some of the solutions that he provides his corporate clients all over the world. Chester Elton has spent two decades helping clients engage their employees to execute on strategy, vision, and values. His work is supported by research with more than 1 million working adults, revealing the proven secrets behind high-performing cultures and teams. His books have been translated into 30 languages, have sold more than 1.5 million copies worldwide. I've got three covers of them printed in front of me. There's the newest one called All In, New York Times bestseller. The second one, Best Team Wins, New York Times bestseller. The third one, Leading with Gratitude, New York Times bestseller. Chester, you're a big get for us. Thank you for your time and welcome to What's Working.
Hey, thanks for the invitation, Kev. Honored to be here.
I really, really appreciate it. I am familiar with your work as a fellow presenter and road warrior, and it's nice to be able to talk to you today. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the audience, Chester, as we get into this. This station and our audience, and particularly this show, is typically going to be a 40 to 45-year-old or older who has a responsibility, a leadership responsibility in their business. Many are small business, but not all are small business. And in fact, one of my listeners and I sat down for lunch yesterday, and I want to begin our conversation with something that his company is going through. They are a Fortune 500 company. They've got several thousand employees, more than that, in fact. And he said that as a result of one of the national consultancies that you've heard, they did a study on their company, and they came back, this national consultancy came back and said, you guys are only getting 80% productivity out of your people, which means, according to our numbers, you've got 1,300 people that you don't need. If you can drive that productivity up to 90 or over 90%, you can let 1,300 people go. Or you can increase your sales and especially busyness in order to get these 1,300 additional people functioning at full form. Your focus, and one of the case studies that I've got printed in front of me here, is employee engagement solved. They have an employee engagement problem. Now, post-COVID, they're able to go to their people and say, hey, if you're not working hard, we're going to let you go or put you on furlough, and suddenly productivity has spiked. But talk to me, Chester, about your expertise in employee engagement and maybe reflect on the challenge that my friend's company had that the consultancy advised you're only getting 80% productivity out of people.
Yeah, well, actually, 80% is actually pretty good, Cam. You know, we look at our database of over 1 million engagement surveys, and the national average of engagement in America is only about a third, just over 33%. So at 80%, they're doing pretty well. You know, when we talk about how do you up engagement, you know, how do you get your people, as we would say, all in, right? You've got to look at not just engagement, but enablement and energy. So if you want to get that other 20% really cranking, you know, don't talk about just are you engaged at work. We want to talk about have you invested in how they can get their jobs done. You know, do they have the right training, the equipment to deliver on the promise of your friend's company? And then lastly, the energy, which we find is the most productivity opportunity, is are they emotionally engaged? In other words, don't tell me just what you do and how you do it. Tell me why you do it. Organizations that really get the why of their work have exceptionally high engagement scores. And I'll give you a quick case study. In our latest work, Leading with Gratitude, we looked at the WD-40, which is, I'm sure you can, if you got a can of WD-40 somewhere in your house or garage.
At least one.
Exactly. That, you know, blue and yellow can, right? Well, here's your skill testing question, and there's a point to it. What does WD-40 stand for? Do you know?
To me, it's lubricant. It makes stuff work easier, quicker, and less squeaky. That's the way I think of it. If you've got to squeak, yeah. If the key doesn't fit in the lock, WD-40, either of those two.
Right. Well, actually, WD-40 actually stands for water displacement.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, I didn't know that.
Well, I think your answer was just as right as mine, to tell you the honest truth. So here's what's really interesting. Gary Ridge is the CEO of WD-40, you know, and they took a look at their engagement scores and whatnot. This was in the last recession. And, you know, as people were coming to work, they kept asking Gary, are you okay? Are you okay? And he finally called his wife and he said, honey, I'm fine. Am I giving off an unwell vibe? Like, do I look sick? And she said, no, honey, they're asking you, are we okay, not are you okay? And I think a lot of that is happening right now with COVID-19, right? Everywhere people are going, they're hearing the bad news. Everything's spiking. You know, things are going to be closed again and so on. And Gary said something really important. He said, you know, let's not waste a good crisis. Mm-hmm. My point is he said, look, we've got good engagement scores. Let's get really good enablement scores. Let's invest in our people. Let's develop them as leaders. Let's develop them as researchers, right? Let's really focus on our why. You know, why we do what we do. Why WD-40 is such an important part of people's lives, to your point. You know, the key is stuck or the hinge squeaks or whatever it might be. And when they focused on that, this was back in 2008, 2009, when the recession, last recession ended, they had a 300% increase in market cap. They went over the next 12 years, right, or the next last 10 years, from a $280 million company to a $2.8 billion company.
Wow.
So my recommendation to your friend is, yeah, look at your engagement scores. 80% engagement is actually really pretty good. If you want to work on that other 20%, are you investing in your people and your products and your services? And have you really focused on why we do what we do to get people not just intellectually engaged, they're also emotionally engaged? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I want to bring an example to you and then present you with a challenge. The example is there's a coffee station or a coffee store here in town, and we interviewed them on the show. They started the store. Actually, they started a business. They didn't know what they were going to do. They had no idea what they were going to do, but they wanted people that were going to be passionately motivated to serve people. And they began to find these people, and then they sat down and said, so what do we want to do? What do we want to sell? And they've become a dynamo coffee service here in town. Drive-through coffee. They've got a coffee van that goes to different events, and it's similar to what you've said. They started with the energy and with the purpose and then found the product. Now, let me throw a challenge to you, because I know this is kind of on the minds of the listeners out there, and that's this. As their businesses begin to come back, and here in the Deep South, Chester, people would say we're not behaving the way we should based on the COVID thing. I call it Darwinism. We are kind of participating in Darwinism down here. We've opened the doors of nearly everything. But many of these companies are now coming back, and there's got to be somebody listening out there who is saying to him or herself, I wonder if I can reset the culture of my company. I'm getting a do-over. I wonder if I can reset the culture, the engagement, the teamwork of the company now that we roll things out again. As I'm bringing people back through the doors post-COVID, can I change things? And I wonder, through this conversation between you and me this afternoon, we couldn't get a recipe on how to do something like that. Now, in one of your case studies I've got right here in front of me, it talks about the numbers of things that most people think are engagement solutions: interesting work, responsibility, autonomy, mastery, purpose, transparent communication, teamwork, trust, and parent empowerment, and clarity. But none of those are the one. None of those are the one. What's the one? I know what the one is. I want you to know what the one.
Well, I think it really comes back to purpose. You know, again, not to be a broken record, it's the why. One of the real-time case studies that we're doing right now is with Texas Roadhouse. And, you know, Texas Roadhouse, they have 600 restaurants. A lot of people don't know that. They have 70,000 employees. And as you know, when the restaurants shuttered and had to go to takeout only or curbside, that was only about 7% of their revenue. So they had to figure it out. Well, do you want to change your culture? Do you want to accentuate your culture? Do you want your culture to be what you've always wanted it to be? At Texas Roadhouse, they always had a culture of, we take care of the employees first, our customers, and then our communities, right? And they really did focus on, look, we're not going to eliminate the virus. We're going to mitigate it. So, right, the first thing they had to do first and foremost was they had to keep their people safe. So if you're going to reset your culture, you know, as you're opening up whatever, you know, business you have, first and foremost, your number one priority has to be, are my people safe? Do my people feel safe coming to work? Secondly, do my customers feel safe coming in to my establishment or eating on the curb or whatever it might be? And then that third part is, how are we best serving our community? So to me, again, you know, if you're going to reset your culture, you have to start with your people. Are you keeping them safe? Do they understand why it's important for them to come to work to serve your customers? You know, are you keeping up with the protocols? You know, I'm wearing a mask. Are you wearing a mask? You know, and have we got a culture where it's safe to say, look, I'm going to follow the protocols and I'm going to call you out if you're not. Not because it's a gotcha. I just want us to all be safe. And once that is established, then your customers can feel safe coming in, and it starts to roll through your community that this is, you know, a business that cares about its people, cares about its customers, and cares about its community. Was that helpful?
Well, let's say I'm a business leader in my workplace, and I decide I would like to reset the culture as we reopen again, and I listen to the things that you've just listed there. But isn't an inherent part of this is that I've got to change too? I can't just say this stuff and expect people to behave differently. That a lot of the leadership, the engagement, the empowerment, the teamwork comes from my behavior. So if I want to reset the culture, I've got to reset myself first.
Exactly. You know, we've got a saying, and you're spot on, Cam, is that the way a leader acts and behaves gives everyone else permission to do the same. So you can say, hey, I want to reset my culture. I want to be more patient and kind. Well, if you, the leader, aren't more patient and kind, it doesn't matter. So you're exactly right. Cultures can change from the bottom up. It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
It's much easier for the culture to start with the leader and cascade down. And what happens when they do what you just described so eloquently is it attracts the right kind of people. It retains the right kind of people. And just as importantly, it rejects the wrong kind of people, the people that don't want to buy into that culture, whatever it is you want. So I couldn't agree more.
So for those listening, I want you to listen to this. This is out of the case study, Employee Engagement Solved. You can get a copy of this at the text number 44222. Text What's Working to 44222. There you'll also find a link to many more case studies on Chester's page. Listen, money was most frequently the lowest ranked motivator in all age groups and geographic regions, while making an impact was universally the most common top work motivator. So, Chester, I'm reopening my business. I want to change the culture. How do I communicate making an impact, which is the largest single thing per your research people want to feel like they're doing? Most of my peers say, money. No. It's not. It's something else. It's non-tangible. It's not even quantifiable. What does this mean?
Right. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about money. I mean, money has to be good enough, right? You have to be able to pay your bills and so on. We're not saying that people will work for free. What we're saying is once you've got that Maslow hierarchy where I can satisfy my base, you know, needs for my family, then the discretionary effort, the above and beyond, is am I making an impact? So, to your point is, let's say we're a grocery store, you know, and you say, look, the impact is we are feeding our community. You know, we're not just trying to rack up as much sales as we can. What we want is we want to feed our community. That's why it's really important that you come to work. You're going to make an impact because there are going to be food and supplies in our grocery store that people desperately need to keep their families fed, to keep their homes safe, and so on and so on. If that motivates you, if that's the kind of impact that is meaningful to you as an employee, you're going to show up every day. You know, you're going to show up every day. So it's really important for you as a leader to articulate how you're making an impact. Now, I would take it even further. Does everyone in your organization, are they able to connect the dots as to how what they do makes an impact? In other words, you know, if you're in accounting, you would say, well, look, I'm just in accounting. I'm not interfacing with customers. You say, yes. The thing is, if the accounting isn't done right, if the books don't balance at the end of the day, if we don't have enough in our reserves to buy more groceries and food, we can't function. So don't think about it as, look, I've just got to make the numbers match up. You got to say, because the numbers match up, we can go buy more product and services to feed our community. So connecting those dots and making sure that everyone in the organization understands why what they do has impact. you know, I know sports analogies are overused.
Chester, I need to interrupt you. We need to go to break here in a second, and I want to pick right back up with the sports analogy because we, like everybody else out there, love a good sports analogy. Folks, Chester Elton has been published in the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Fast Company, New York Times. He's been on Today's Show, CNN, ABC. We've got an expert on the line, and there's a lot of meat left on the bone. We're going to pull it all off. We'll be right back here in a little bit with Chester Elton. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. You're listening to What's Working with Cam Marston, brought to you by Regions. We focus on the workplace and the workforce trends that are shaping the workplaces and workforces around us. We find experts who can chime in, who either are in their own business talking about the trends that are shaping them, or people that can comment on the trends that they study in the workplace and workforce. And that's what we're doing today with Chester Elton. He's the co-founder of The Culture Works, a global training company, and a board member of Camp Coral, a nonprofit for children of wounded and fallen military heroes. Chester is a good guy to the bone. Speaking of bone, Chester, we said prior to the break, we're not going to leave any meat on the bone, and you are about to introduce us to a sports metaphor, which we all love. I ask you to pick that up, please.
Right. Well, you know, we talk about, can everybody in your organization connect the dots to how they're making an impact? It's much like any kind of sports team you've been on, or even an orchestra, right? Everybody has their role to play. And when everybody plays their role well, your odds of winning go up. You know, kickers kick, linemen block, quarterbacks, you know, pass and hand off, running backs run. You know, every skill is different and every skill is important. You know, I know that we're hoping there's going to be a football season. I know football isn't just a sport, you know, where you come from. It's a religion. And, you know, the best teams, everybody gets their role. And I think in great organizations and businesses, it's much the same. You know, if you're the greeter, if you're the cook, if you're the chef, if you're the dishwasher, if you're the guy behind the bar, when everybody gets it, good things happen. And so I would admonish leaders that are either changing their culture or deepening the culture they have. When it comes to impact, make sure everybody knows not just what they do and how they do it and why it's important, how it connects to the why of how we're making an impact in our communities. And if you can do that, your odds of success and winning go way up.
Let me ask you a specific question about that, and then I want to move on into some of the other content in this case study. But let's assume that I'm the leader and that I have just heard what you've said, and I've got to make sure people are clear with their role. How do you suggest people actually say that? Do they walk up to the greeter and say, hey, you're the greeter, here's your role? That sounds kind of confrontational, sounds a little, I don't know what. How do you encourage people to actually phrase that thing?
Well, I think it comes down to asking good questions. You know, you don't come up and say, look, Wendy, you're the greeter, here's how you do it. You say, Wendy, you know, your role is to be the greeter. How do you see that as being really important? And what are ways that you enjoy doing what you do? And what are things that we could maybe do a little better, you know, in your role? I love leaders that will have what we call aspirational conversations with their people. And they'll say, look, Wendy, you know, today you're the greeter. We love what you do. Where would you like to be 2 to 3 years from now? You know, what are some ideas you've got on how to make your role better? So I don't think you have to be, you know, mandate. Here's what the greeter does. Here's what you wear. Here's what you say. And don't deviate from the script. I think particularly younger generations that are coming in, they want to interpret their jobs. They want to make their jobs better. They want to find meaning in their jobs. And so by asking good questions and allowing them to, you know, get their good ideas out of their heads into your business, not only do they find more meaning in their work, you're going to get a more engaged and more innovative, you know, a person on your team. Does that resonate?
It does resonate. And I want to talk to you about the next generation. We have a giant crop of people that are that got out of college this past spring that are looking for jobs in a tough, tough economy. I'm curious what your beliefs are about the millennials, which are 40-ish years old, and Gen Z, which follows them. How do you think this current economic crisis, as well as the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter movement, et cetera, How do you think this will impact them as they go into the workplace, and what should an employer be aware of regarding that?
Well, I think not only is it going to impact them, it's going to impact everyone. You know, millennials are already the largest segment of the workforce. Gen Z, you pointed out, you know, on the break, I was telling you I grew up in Canada. In Canada, that's Gen Z, by the way. I think that kind of sounds cooler, but that's because I'm Canadian. These generations, generally speaking, you don't want to ever pigeonhole anybody. They really are looking to make an impact. We've got this wonderful assessment that we've used in our work at the Culture Works for years now called the Motivators Assessment. And as we broke out millennials in particular to see what were their key motivators, impact, learning, and family, you know, much more into the noble cause, much more into impacting the community and being responsible. The environment is more important. You know, people are more important. And so as you start to look at you know, what we're going through in COVID and with the Black Lives Matter and so on, these issues resonate deeply with these generations. They want the world to be a better place. They don't want to just sell more widgets. I'll tell you what, though, if you can talk about how selling more widgets and being responsible in our products and services helps make the world a better place, boy, you'll get discretionary effort like you've never seen before because they're so passionate about making a difference, not just in their communities, globally. And I think what you're seeing, particularly with COVID and as well as Black Lives Matter, is, you know, COVID is global. I mean, every country on the planet is dealing with the pandemic. Well, wasn't it fascinating to see that the Black Lives Matter movement, I mean, there were protests in Toronto,
yeah,
Vancouver, Paris,
London,
Berlin, London. Yes, I mean, this idea of inequity and racism and inequality, it resonated around the world very quickly. See, the thing that you've got to remember is that, you know, the generations that are growing up with everything at their fingertips on a smartphone, on a tablet, however they connect, they're connected globally. They're not just connected in Mobile, Alabama or the South. They're connected globally. They've got friends in Singapore. They've got connections in the Ukraine and the UK and Brazil. So issues that resonate with them resonate globally very quickly. So as leaders, what do we do with that? Again, we've got to tap into their passions. You know, I was talking to a CEO of a wonderful company, Tempur-Pak. You know, they're a packing. I mean, this is a packing company, right? They supply stuff that you pack things with. Now, their noble cause is they want to eliminate styrofoam. And their packing materials are for food and medicine to make sure that it gets there fresh and usable. Well, you talk to, you know, millennials and Gen Z that you want to eliminate styrofoam, that everything that you make is curbside recyclable, and that you're making a difference. Holy smoke. I mean, they're growing at 90% a year for the last 3 years, and their profits and engagement are through the roof. And who are they attracting? Under 35, under 30, under 25. And boy, they come to work with a passion. You know, I think that's probably one of the best case studies we can use of a very old business, packing material, right? And how do we impact the world? We get rid of styrofoam.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So in your case study, you mentioned this impact, learning, and family. Do you think perhaps when I was 25 or even 40, these were more important to me? So the question is, are these elements a phase of youth? Or are they a phase of this generation? If I'm a 50-year-old and I'm hiring, can I say these characteristics are not only strong of this generation today, but they will be strong of this generation tomorrow? Is it a part of their DNA, or is it going to go away perhaps as they grow up?
I think it's the former. I think it's part of their DNA. You know, one of the things that we noticed as we studied generationally how motivators changed is that there were core values that didn't change over time. You know, money does change over time, right? And we found recognition changed over time. Early in your career, it was much more important than later in your career. Later in your career, recognition was about legacy. The areas that really didn't change were impact, learning, and family. I mean, the top three that didn't change are the top three motivators of the generations coming up, which we found fascinating. You know, I have four kids. They're all grown and gone. They're all millennials, right, from the beginning to the tail end. And it's very interesting as we have conversation. I grew up in an era that was much more materialistic. It was about acquiring stuff. Stuff mattered. You know, my kids, it's all about experience. You know, my youngest son, Garrett, he said, you know, he recently married, been married a couple of years now. He said, you know, we're coming home for Christmas. And you know what? We don't want stuff. We want to do things together as a family. I said, well, what do you want as a Christmas present? He said, you know what? Pay for our plane tickets. Wow. You know, he's very practical. He said, look, we want to spend time. Let's go to plays. If we can do that around Christmas, let's spend time together. Let's find something we can do together. Let's go serve at a soup kitchen. Let's go clean up a park. I mean, let's have memories. Let's not worry so much about the stuff. And to your point, I don't think that goes away.
Yeah.
I think that becomes part of who you are and how you experience life.
Well, we hope so. And I hope that the generation that follows the millennials, I have four children as well, and none of them has asked me for an experience for Christmas. They have a list on a legal pad, numerated with stars and arrows. And I'm afraid the experience, I would say, is, hey, let's start with cleaning your room. Let's start with mowing the yard. Why don't we start with that, which is probably why they don't ask. But one of the things, and folks, you can get this case study. You can tell I'm a big fan of it. Text What's Working to 44222. You'll get a copy of the case study as well as a link to Chester's page where you can find others as well as a little bit more about their research. One of the things you list under manager tip engaging millennials and Gen Z is worry about their well-being. Now, I know people out there that will roll their eyes when they hear that. You got about a minute. Chester, what does that mean?
What it means is I care about you as a person, not just as a worker. You know, it used to be that you had your work life and your personal life. You know what? That is no longer the case, particularly if you're working from home now as opposed to being in an office. Your commute is you walk through a door, right? Your smartphone allows you to be available 24/7. So we no longer have a work life and a personal life. We have a life. And the best employers care about the whole employee. They care about what's going on at home. They care about what's going on in their head, what's going on in their schooling. Do they want to get an advanced degree? Those organizations that care about their people get their people to care about them, and everything gets better. I think that's what that means.
When we come back from break, Chester, we're going to have you stick around for the third segment. Our third guest is unavailable, and I want to talk to you because my sense, Chester, is this all comes back to the boss. It all comes back to one person. There's no schedule you can set up. There's no incentive program. It's on the shoulders of my listeners to make this stuff happen. And we'll get into that when we get back from break. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. I'm Cam Marston on the line with Chester Elton. We'll be right back. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. On the line with me, Chester Elton. He serves as a leadership consultant to firms like American Express, ATT, Avis Budget Group, and Procter & Gamble. He is talking to us about employee engagement, employee morale, teams, all this kind of stuff that fits under the banner of his expertise. Chester, prior to the break, it sounded to me like so much of what you're asking of employees comes down to the originator of the message, and that would be the boss, the manager, the supervisor, the owner, that it's all on their shoulders. There's no way to set up an incentive plan that touches everybody the same way. There's no way to set up a schedule, a work-from-home schedule, that touches everybody the same way, that it's down to the individual who leads the workplace to take this stuff on. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, and I would expand on that just a little bit, and let me put it in perspective. The reason that is so important is because the way a leader acts gives everyone else permission to act the same way, right? And so you need to be – now, where cultures get really good is where it's not just top-down, but it's side-to-side. You know, you just don't have a leader that leads with gratitude. You have a culture of gratitude. So while the leader sets the tone, there's no question about that. In great organizations, that permission flows. It's safe for you to do the same. And now it's not just a leader that leads with gratitude. It's everyone that's grateful to each other. It's not just a leader that leads with innovation. It's everyone in the organization has permission to innovate and to cross-pollinate. So I agree with you 100%. It starts at the top. The good cultures, it permeates down. Now, one little other data point for you. The number one reason people leave a job isn't pay. It's the relationship with the immediate supervisor. Did my immediate supervisor, my boss, did they care? Was my voice heard? When I performed, was that performance noticed and recognized? So you are spot on. I just wanted to elaborate a little more on that, that it's not always just the leader's responsibility. It's the leader's responsibility to set the tone, create a safe culture, and give everyone else permission to do the same. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I want to ask you to give a perhaps an inspirational note to the leaders out there who are thinking, I've got incredibly decreased business right now. I've got to watch out for the safety of my customers and my employees. I've got to cover everybody up in this sanitizer liquid on a constant basis. I've got to have face masks and everything else. And now I'm learning that in order to get my workplace to a new level, I've got to take on a lot of new roles and be the model for everyone. Wouldn't it just be easier if we went online? Maybe it would just be easier if I let somebody else be the leader. Well, you know, there are people out there listening going, this sounds like work. It sounds like work. Have you studied the reward the leader gets? Not monetary, but internal reward from the leader for doing this.
Sure. You know, I would tell all the leaders out there that are listening to your wonderful show, ask yourself this question. What do I want my legacy to be? When this is all said and done, and eventually it will come to an end, there will be a vaccine and we'll all be able to gather and hug and, you know, go to big church, you know, meetings and funerals and so on. Well, when that time comes, whether it's 6 months from now or a year from now or 6 weeks from now, right, ask yourself, what do you want your legacy to be? How will you be remembered? Were you the leader that stepped up and did care for the employees and the customers and the community? And yeah, it is hard work. There's no doubt about it. Great leaders are forged in hard times. Who are the great leaders that you admire? Well, I guarantee you they're leaders that you admire because they took their organizations or their nations or their people through hard times. You know, we revere Gandhi. Was that easy? No, of course it wasn't. He was persistent. He was dogged. He stuck to his guns. His legacy is forever one of peaceful protest that led to the birth of a new nation. That's the big, you know, dramatic example. In your business, in your organization, when it's all said and done, what will be your legacy? Were you a leader that led with gratitude? Were you kind? Were you patient? Did you keep people safe? Did you feed your community, whether it's, you know, physically or emotionally or spiritually? Because that's the legacy that you're going to live with. And is it hard? You bet. Is it worth it? Absolutely. You talk about the ripple effect to the leader. You know, I tell leaders, when you're having a tough day, go out and serve somebody that works with and for you. Go out and recognize and give credit to someone that's working with and for you. It's what your mom and dad taught you at 5 years old.
Yeah, you're right.
Always better to give than receive, because when you give, you always receive.
LeadingWithGratitudeBook.com, folks. LeadingWithGratitudeBook.com. There, Chester offers a lot of insight, a lot of motivation to make sure you wake up and want to address this type of stuff. Chester, we're going to close the show, but don't hang up. I want to thank you for your time today once we get off the air. Folks, Chester Elton is out there. You can enter Chester Elton into your web browser. You'll find a lot of content on him. He's up east. He had enough time to help us with this show today, and we're eternally grateful, Chester, for your time. Don't forget to reserve July 15th at noon for our first What's Working webinar with Mark Sanborn, talking about the post-COVID workplace and the 3-5 things you need to do to get ready for it. We will have another show for you next week. Everybody, have a great weekend. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. I'm Cam Marston.